Welcome to Authors on Tour Live, a weekly podcast for people who love to hear about books from the authors themselves. My name is Darren Fote, and today we are podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore, one of the premier independent bookstores in the nation, with three locations in the Metro Denver area. You can visit www.authorsontourlive.com for a complete list of upcoming podcasts. Wait a minute, it's time to begin.
Tonight we're very, very pleased to welcome two New York Times best-selling authors, James Rollins and Grant Blackwood. Rollins is the author of over 30 best-selling novels. He's also the founder of Authors United, a group of best-selling authors dedicating to raising funds and awareness for USA Cares, which in turn assists soldiers and their families with job placement, housing assistance, and emergency aid. Blackwood is a U.S. Navy veteran who spent 3 years aboard a guided missile frigate as an operations specialist and a pilot rescue swimmer. He is the author of the Briggs Tanner series, the Fargo Adventure series with Clive Cussler, and the number one New York Times bestseller, Dead or Alive, with Tom Clancy. Tonight they join us to discuss and sign their recent collaboration, The Kill Switch, start of a new series. It should be very exciting. Please join me in welcoming James Rollins and Grant Blackwood.
Well, first of all, thank you for coming. Appreciate it very much. This is the only event, well, besides tomorrow.
Right.
Where Grant and I are going to be together. So this is going to be a rare opportunity to get double signed books. So if you want us to sign, you know, dear eBay reader, we're happy to do that. Or dear eBay buyer, we'll be happy to sign that way too. So we'll leave some time for Q&A, but I thought I'd just give a little background about the genesis of the series, about the characters, about then we'll talk about our relationship working together, then go from there, and then whatever else you want to talk about. Grant has a lot of dirty jokes, he said, that he wanted to share with you all, so I'm sure he'd like to do that.
They were just for you, but...
We need to share.
We need to share.
That's
right. She did. She was very selective about the sharing.
So I'll talk about the genesis of the characters. How many people have read either Tracker or Bloodline where we introduce... Well, everybody did. Almost everybody. Who didn't? Why haven't you? Okay. Okay. So just a little background for those that haven't been introduced to this set of characters. Tucker Wayne is a former captain, a former Army Ranger, and he was on a tour in Afghanistan. He had two military working dogs, Kane and Abel. Abel did not make it out of Afghanistan. So he's somewhat suffering from PTSD. He's sort of roaming the country and the world with his dog, his the remaining military working dog, Kane, and getting into all sorts of misadventures. How I sort of got the concept for that pair of characters initially was I'd done a USO tour to Iraq and Kuwait back in 2010. It was a great opportunity to go out there and meet the men and women in the field, shake their hands, thank them for the service. We encouraged them to journal out there, to write accounts of what's going on with their lives out there. If not for a book, if nothing else, for personal family history. These are a great significant events that you shouldn't just sort of forget about or gloss over. You know, share it. Make a log of it. Now, of course, we were a test balloon. This is the first year that we had ever gone out there. The USO had never sent authors out on tour before. They sent rock stars and cheerleaders and comedians, and now it's authors. So we weren't quite. I thought so, but we weren't quite sure we were going to get that reception. We thought it might be, Jim, get out of the way. There's cheerleaders behind you. But we were actually very warmly received. We had comments like, finally somebody's here that we actually want to speak to, which was great. I was thrilled to hear that. And it seemed like every single military guy or gal has like a pocket right here that's the perfect size of a paperback novel. And like 9 times out of 10, they had a paperback novel shoved in there. So it was a great adventure. It was a great opportunity to go out there. We were flying C-130s to different bases, which are basically like you're flying basically like a flying warehouse. You expect like a Costco person to come by with a plat full of toilet paper. So I'll share this one story from that trip. Is that we were going into one of the bases, and the base had just had a mortar attack the night before, and so they decided because they're bringing celebrities. They need to do a tactical descent, which A, did not warn us. B, even if they did, I didn't know what that meant. But what it means is that you're going to dive down, twist sideways, go back up again, and go back down again. Well, when you're in, you know, this flying warehouse and you're sitting on this thing sort of clinging some webbing back here and the plane begins to do that, it's unexpected. So I'm looking across the cabin. I see, you know, Steve's sitting over there on his side of the cabin because we never get too close to each other. I look at Steve, and Steve's turning a little green, and I think Steve Barry's going to vomit. I'm going to capture it on film. And unbeknownst to me, Steve is looking over here going, I think Jim Rollins is going to vomit, and I'm going to capture it on video. It's like two Old West gunslingers were going for our cell phones, just daring the other to lose it. Now, of course, there is no videos of me upchucking on YouTube, nor is there any of Steve, so we managed to land safely just fine. But again, being a veterinarian, you know, I always, that side I'm never going to escape. I, you know, always wanted to be a veterinarian, and if you want more story during Q&A, I'll tell you about how a veterinarian became an author, but I'll skip over that. But again, being a veterinarian, I go out in the field, and of course, it's great meeting the men and women, but I see dogs. Look, there's dogs here. So what am I going to do? I'm going to go, you know, pet a dog. Can I pet your dog? Sure, if you don't mind losing your hand. All right, I'll risk it. But I was mostly curious about what that relationship was like between the dog and the handler. So I talked to a few of the gentlemen out there at different bases. It's like every base had dogs, so it was great. So I could talk to multiple different people. And I was hearing the sort of the same story all the time. You know, I was questioning them, do you just treat your dog like a weapon? Is it a sidearm? Is it just a tool? What's that relationship like? And it's not. It's a very deep bond. They sleep together, train together, play together. They're around each other 24/7. And they develop a deep bond. And I heard this from at multiple bases. And I've heard this also when I went to Lackland Air Force Base to see them training. There's a phrase that they use, the phrase is it runs down the lead, which means that over time, the emotions of the dog and the handler flow up and down that leash between the two of them. And it bonds that handler and dog really intimately together to the point where the dog or the handler can read each other without almost having any hand signal or any type of verbal command. One of the guys said, you know, I think my dog understands me better than my own wife does. So, you know, I thought this is a relationship I've never really seen in print before. So I'm going to try to capture that. So I wrote Tracker initially just as a test balloon. You know, can I pull this off? How do I want to write these characters? And I got the idea, well, what if I wrote, you know, some scenes from the dog's perspective? What might that be like? And again, I didn't want to do the Disney version of the dog. You know, I didn't want my dog, you know, breaking out into song in the middle of the story or something like that. Squirrel. Yeah, or squirrel, exactly. I want to be real.
For a lot of the editing Jim did of my stuff. I had a lot of dog songs in there.
Not at all. Very light editing. So I wanted to create a real dog. So I took my background as animal behavior background from a veterinary side, what I learned from talking to the guys in the field, what I learned over at Lackland Air Force Base to try to create, you know, hopefully an experience that I'm going to take my reader and put them in the paws of the dog, experience the world the way the dog or dog really would might experience the world. How do they experience that battlefield? What is that relationship like from the dog's point of view to the handler? What's that relationship like, you know, off the battlefield? How do they handle battlefield? Do they have PTSD? All things I sort of want to explore with that character. And so once I wrote the short story and sort of worked through I felt satisfied that I could handle that. And I sort of recruited them to Sigma into a book called Bloodline, where they joined Sigma for an adventure. But once I finished that book, I knew I wasn't quite done with that set of characters. I liked them. I wanted to visit them. A lot of readers wanted to see them again. And I thought, well, you know, that's great, but I don't have enough time to write another book. Now, I've known Grant now. I'm going to send the phone over to him in just a second. So I'll let Grant share, you know, how our relationship started, which is basically help.
You know, I had just finished with Clive. I'd finished the third book with Clive Cussler, and I loved it. It was a great experience, but I thought, well, now I'm going to write my own series. And I was all prepped to do that. And then Jim calls and says, you know, I have this series idea, and here it is. And immediately I knew I wasn't done co-authoring for a couple reasons. One, the concept was amazing. And two, Jim and I are friends. And three, when somebody of Jim's caliber calls and they say, I want to work with you, you know, I thought about it for, it must have been 2.2 seconds. And I said, yes, absolutely. And we got together and he showed me the concept. And I was, of course, immediately intrigued because I knew this was going on. I only had two reservations. One, could I, from my perspective, I knew Jim was going to do interior and he could pull that off fine, but could I create that relationship with him where they would see Kane and Tucker together. And my other concern was I'm such a dog lover that, one, I knew Abel had a tough ending in Afghanistan, and so I was concerned about that because it would make me cry, and it did. But the other thing is that I knew I would have to fight the impulse to have Tucker leave Kane in safe places. Like, I'm going to go do this terrible thing. Why don't you stay in this pet hotel for a few weeks, and I'll come back, get you, and you'll be okay.
Kong toy.
Yes, Kong toy, and a sweater, and, you know, his little beanie, and everything was okay. But I managed to resist that, and that's kind of how the series started. So it's been a lot of fun, and it's been a challenge, a good challenge.
So why I approached Grant was that, you know, again, we were friends. We were, you know, early members, not, I won't say founding members of ITW, the International Thriller Society, but almost. We were like right there in the trenches with the beginning of that organization. And we worked together on different projects together, so I knew him, you know, fairly well. But I also had read all of his Clive Cussler books and enjoyed them thoroughly. He wrote also a book, which he didn't say, about Tom Clancy. Love that book, too.
Was that $5 I owed you?
Yes, please. But I also knew that, you know, when I'm writing, if I wanted to pull, you know, it was nice having Tucker and Kane and Bloodline, but I knew if they were gonna stand up and survive in an entire novel where pretty much almost all the novels from Tucker's perspective or Kane's perspective, where you really don't leave that point of view too often in the novel. I've had no military background. You know, I'm veterinary. I can neuter a cat under 30 seconds, but there's no way I'm rescuing somebody out of a submarine. So I didn't think I could adequately in the course of sustaining a full novel from the aspect of writing from a military perspective by myself. You know, I need somebody that can understand the mindset of a military, that knew the hardware better than I knew the hardware, which is a lot more than me. So I thought, I love Grant. I like what he's writing. I think it could just, you know, if he can take, you know, all that military background and make Tucker more authentic. I thought, you know, from doing Kane enough times, I can make Kane work. I wasn't quite sure I could make Tucker work for the length of a novel. So I thought, well, I'm going to, you know, maybe if I, you know, borrow Grant's, you know, skill, we can go ahead and you know, get Tucker where he needs to be. I'll bring Kane where he needs to be. And I can bring the science background to the story. And he's got a lot of history background from his background, too. So he can bring a lot of history to it. So we just sort of, you know, cobbled together a long outline and decided, you know, who's going to do right which parts and shared things back and forth. And actually, it went extremely smoothly, surprisingly. Not surprisingly, I suppose, but...
Well, you know, I think... you know, every partnership in the beginning, you kind of wonder how it's going to go, but it was almost bump-free, really. And I should say that, to Jim's credit, he learned very quickly about the military mindset and how those people think. And over time, he started saying, well, how would he think here? How would he feel there? So he's a quick learner, and I would expect that from somebody who has the courage to open up a cute, fluffy dog and do operations. So he caught on very quick.
What was the time frame? I'm trying to remember back. It was almost a full year, I think, from the time we sort of, because it took a while to figure out what the story is and work on the outline, do the research before we started writing. And then that took a, you know, chunk of time back and forth, and then editing. A lot of, you know, question people I ask during the collaborations is, you know, do you get in any fights? Not really, because usually, you know, similar with my experience with Rebecca, is that, you know, we let the story dictate most of our decisions. I don't think we ever really came to a loggerhead about any particular issues. But what is great about, our, you know, working with somebody else is it's just not one brain there, which, trust me, I will paint my characters into a corner, and I have no idea how to get them out of that corner. And sometimes that happened even with this story, but what happens is, like, help! It's like, you know, it's like having a little, you know, those little elves that, you know, they make your shoes overnight for you. It's like that. You can just throw a problem to Grant or vice versa. And hopefully, you know, over the next 24 hours, some of us comes up to a solution that's like, oh, great. So that's the one great thing. But also, I think we learn from each other, too, is that I learned stuff from Grant and hopefully vice versa. I don't want to assume that, because when I was learning to write, and I advocate this whenever it says, what's the best tip you can give to a writer? Write every day, You got to practice your prose. That's an old adage. Write every day, write every day. You should expect to write a million words before you should expect to get published. But you should be, my caveat to that is you should be reading every night. Because whatever problem you have during your writing day, whether it's how to introduce a character, how to do dialogue, when you read at night and you see an example of that, because that little problem's been stuck in your head during your workday, when you read at night, you suddenly get it. It suddenly makes sense. And so, like, I've had no formal training in writing. Veterinarian, again. If you read in my books, you go, he's had no formal training in writing. It was all from reading. And so that's why, you know, I think where we learned a lot from it is, again, when you're in the thick, when you're in those trenches working with somebody else and you're struggling with something, you see his solution or vice versa, you go, oh, okay, now I sort of get it. So it was, there was, you know, it's very beneficial there too.
So did you send the writing back and forth via email?
Or? Via email, yep. Because he lives here. He lives here. They're indicating I'm supposed to repeat the question aloud. The question is how do we exchange material? Email. With Rebecca, we used to Skype because Rebecca is in Germany, Berlin. So we couldn't really find a convenient way of talking on the phone. Grant just and I just talk on the phone. Rebecca and I Skype because it's more convenient. Plus, I like to make fun of her, and it's a great deal of fun because I can do it right to her face.
Plus, Grant doesn't know what Skype is, so...
It seemed like I was going to say something else, but I've totally blanked out there.
Okay, something about he lives here?
Right, so he lives in Colorado, and I live in Sacramento. So I don't think we ever met during the writing process. It was all long distance the entire time. And same with Rebecca. I never met Rebecca during the entire writing process. She moved from Hawaii to Berlin, I think, to get further away from me. Too bad for her. No, we have a great relationship.
Well, when I got out of witness protection, the question is, what is my background? What is Grant's background in writing? I'm sorry, I missed her jump up, and that's my signal to repeat. I apologize. You know, I started writing when I was, this year it'll be 27 years. I started in July of 1987, shortly after I got out of the Navy, and I caught myself on a good day rather than saying, tomorrow I'll try that novel. I got out a typewriter and I started writing, and 12 years to the day after I got out of the Navy, I got my first book deal. But Jim is right about reading and writing. You just do it every day. And when I teach, I use two acronyms because Navy people, military people love acronyms, so I throw in a lot of acronyms. And there's two of them I use for students who are afraid they'll never get it. One is WOS. And one is ROS, and they are respectively writer's osmotic syndrome. You learn by doing, and you're not sure how, but you just do. And reader's osmotic syndrome. As a writer, you have to devour your genre. You have to know it. And by knowing it and reading everything, things start to click. Like Jim said, you'll just get a feel for what isn't working. In the beginning, I knew it was wrong, but I couldn't figure it out, and eventually I did most of the time. So...
Yeah, I've got an acronym too. It's a little on a little post-it note right by my monitor because, you know, it helps even for me sometimes. Like on this side of the monitor, I have the five senses, so I don't forget to add different sensory things where other side is just not visual. Make sure it's something smells or has. But over here is my acronym. It's POC. It's today I give myself permission to write crap. Because sometimes if you get the feeling like you have to write perfection, you're gonna get you know, stuck. So sometimes I don't care what I'm gonna write, it might be a piece of crap. So it was actually POS, but we'll say it's POC, shall we?
That was good editing.
Yeah,
right there.
Exactly. It's being recorded.
It's funny how many rules authors have. They call different things, but they're the same thing. And Jim has POC or POS, depending on your flavor. But I also I teach students, embrace being bad, because most likely, unless you're Stephen King, you're going to be bad in the beginning. And just embrace it and know you'll get better. And that takes a lot of pressure off. Oh, my God, I'm awful. Well, you're awful now, but tomorrow you'll be better. And the next day you'll be better. And that's part of writer's osmotic syndrome.
Yes, sir.
You mentioned having created an outline, but also mentioned having written yourself into corners. So on the plotting to Seat of Pants Discovery writer continuum, where do you find yourself, and Grant, are you anywhere in the same neighborhood?
The question is about regard to outline, but still writing yourself into a corner. It happens, because a lot of times when your outline sounds like it works, and sometimes you'll deviate from it, because it feels that's where the characters are saying it should go, because of the motivation when you're doing an outline, you think the motivation is there, but when you've written it, you go, oh, the motivation's not there. The motivation is to go right, not left. And when you go left, there's a horrible, horrible thing over there that's going to eat you. And to go that direction, it tries to eat you. Then it's like, well, how am I going to stop him from eating me? So even though they're the best laid plans of mice and men, sometimes get into trouble. And I run into that probably actually more with my solo work, because I don't, you know, being working with a co-author, we do need to have a bigger roadmap to work from, some more details. Whereas for my solo work, I don't know how your solo work works, but I know the beginning, I know the end, I know a few stopping points in between, but I don't necessarily know how A connects to B connects to C, because to me some of the joy of writing is sitting down there and discovering that. Not so much this afternoon. This afternoon was cooperate.
What you said.
What he said. Thank you. Anybody else? Some other topic I was going to bring about the books, but I can't remember what it was. Go ahead.
You write by yourself, you're writing with a co-author, and then you have other things in between.
Uh-huh.
How do you keep all of those ideas to their right book, right corner? Without getting them tangled.
It can get tangled. And that is, you know, the question is how do we write multi, you know, he's working on solo projects and joint projects. I'm working on solo projects and joint projects. And there's other things. We do some short stories every now and again for different magazines. Just to throw it out there, there's a book coming out in July called Face Off. That's being produced by ITW, the International Thriller Writers, being published by Simon & Schuster's. It's where we take different authors and we pit their characters against each other. So you know, Steve Barry and I, it's Cotton against Gray in a little novella in a jungle.
Not in a C-130 with...
No projectile vomiting at all. I don't think there was in that short story. It can be. Initially, it's poorly kept secret that under a different pen name, I used to write fantasy, even though he's not quite as dead as some people may think.
Really?
Yes, his death has been, if you notice, there's a whole new website for James Clemens. For some reason, I don't know why, I decided to revamp the entire website from scratch. For some bizarre reason. Once upon a time, I tried to write one of the fantasies while I was writing Sandstorm. I was doing alternating chapters. It was like it felt like gears were stripping in my head, you know, trying to switch between those two things. So I thought I'm never, ever going to do that again. And so I never have until I started working on some of the co-written projects. And why that works more is that, you know, it's not just you. And the project usually is fairly well outlined in advance. So you can work sort of simultaneously on the two projects because this is very firmly outlined. This not so much. And so you can sort of switch between them a little bit. So it's not too bad. Gets a little confusing sometimes. I put the wrong character in books occasionally. Like, well, he's not in that series. Let's go over there. You were head-handed first. Yep.
When I read your books, I'm always intrigued by the amount of science that you have in it, plus the amount of history. And it's always maybe parts of science that are kind of cutting edge, not everybody knows about. And I've often wondered if you read like a news article or see something that's like an intriguing science thought to you, and then you decide
the question is regarding the books that have. I blend history and science, and the question, I guess, is which comes first, history or science,
right.
and how does that come about?
I wondered if you see like a hot topic somewhere that
That's pretty much exactly what happens. And I've always got my antenna up for that next idea, and I'm always, you know, scouring through different magazines. There's three levels of things I'm looking for. I will look at for books for different topics. But books, generally, that data a lot of times is a year or two old. So then I also go to magazines, and that information generally may be 3 to 6 months old. Then I look for internet articles, which has more topicality. And oftentimes I also actually have contacts in the industry that will send me really cool stuff that nobody knows about. So that's the really cool stuff right there. And so whenever I come across, you know, a piece of history that maybe ends in a question mark, a historical mystery that might be something that's fun to solve, I'll cut it out. If I'm watching like a history channel and something comes up, I'll jot a note. And it ends up all in just one big box. I had a It was really sort of embarrassing. I had a news crew come to the house yesterday because they wanted to. It's their Good Day Sacramento. Always been supportive. They always had me at the show. So this year said, "Let's come to your house, Jim." I thought, I'm in the middle of a book. It looks like a bomb went off in my office. I said, "All right." So I tidied it up, and they said, "We want to shoot with your dogs." I thought, "Okay, that's great." So I got my dogs. You've heard this story already. I got my dogs groomed. And usually I just wash them in the shower myself, but I wanted them fluffy and pretty and great for everyone. Camera ready. Bandanas and everything. So they they're at the house for like 3 hours. They always just sort of coming back to me, and here's Jim this, and here's Jim here. And so they did the first thing in the office, and that's when he got to see my box of ideas, and he threatened to steal it at one point. I thought, I'm going to kill you if you do, because that is where all my stories come from. So I'm sitting there giving the little thing, and then I hear a splash. And I see Mindy, my first dog, Echo, first dog, jump into the pool. And then in goes Duncan. So far with that big fluffy, those big wet mops out there. So much for the dog segment. But I always, you know, collate those ideas. And what happens is sort of randomly weird things end up next to each other in that box, that piece of history, that piece of science that I would not necessarily have connected just from just thinking about it myself, but just physically seeing it there. I will begin to see a connection. I will research that connection. Sometimes I go, no, I was wrong. There is no connection. I can't make that work. And other times it begins to fit together. And if I get excited about it, I get sort of passionate that this is really cool. That's what I want to go with then. That's roughly how most of it happens. Sometimes it's history, sometimes it's science, sometimes it's the place. Amazonia, it was a place. I wanted to set it to something in the jungle. Boom. Book started. So different books start from different, you know, some of the history that started. Devil Colony was history. I wanted to deal with the history of Native Americans and their contribution to the founding of the country. Other things, it's science that triggers it. So it really depends on each book is a little different. Yes?
So I was wondering, what should we start anticipating?
Here, why don't you, I'll let you talk about you want to talk about all about what you're working on next?
Oh, we'll do that.
Because you have the you have your re-release of your series. Talk about that.
Right. Briggs Tanner was my original series. Came out in 2001, 2002, and 2003. It was successful, but not successful enough, so it kind of disappeared, and that's fine. But Briggs Tanner has always held a place in my heart because he's my firstborn. And we are re-releasing the series, new covers, new copy editing, May 27th, digital. And so we're really excited about that, and we'll see what happens. Whether it'll be print, time will tell. So, but that's about it. I think we're trying to finish up the second Tucker and Kane book, and I'll let Jim tell you if he wants to tell you what it's about.
Will this be a trilogy?
It's hopefully going to be an ongoing series, as long as we want to write. I mean... I always hate saying that because I think, well, Kane's going to live. Well, who knows? Yes, he's going to live. Of course he is.
You really think I could kill him?
Exactly. I don't think either of us could. We'll call George R. R. Martin to come in, and if we have somebody that needs to kill. He kills dogs really badly. He kills those wolves. I can't believe he cut off the head of Robb Stark's dog and sewed it to his head. That was just awful. I forgot what I was even talking about. Oh, what's happening next? So, yes, we're coming up next is Tucker and King. I'm imagining this time next year. It deals with what's going on the next level of AA technology and military hardware. It deals with drone warfare. It deals with surveillance, big data. And it leaves Tucker and King running very, very fast. End of summer is the next Big Sigma book, The Sixth Extinction, which I have to practice pronouncing. The Sixth Extinction. Enunciate. I describe that book as making the end of the world fun again. It's sort of a cross between, you know, if you took a sequel to Subterranean... You took a sequel to Amazonia, and you pushed them together. So part of the place takes place in Antarctica. We'll be revisiting there, where something is under the ice again. And we'll also be going to the Amazon jungle, where somebody is brewing an entirely strange little biosphere there with strange creatures. So it's fun. I'm very proud of that book. I get to go crazy. as an environmental. I mean, as a evolution biologist, I get to go way on the extreme. Yes, sir.
Why a Belgian shepherd? Is that what you saw in Afghanistan, or are you just kind of...
Good, that's a good question.
Dog,
why a Belgian shepherd? Actually, it's a Belgian Malinois, which also sometimes is called a Belgian shepherd. Just Malinois looks weird on page, so occasionally we'll alternate between Malinois and shepherd. It's the most commonly used military war dog right now. Why they choose the Malinois, they're not quite as overbred as the German Shepherds and some of the Dobermans, which unfortunately have a lot of their intelligence bred out of them. So the Malinois is somewhat pristine. Very smart dogs, very loyal dogs, high ability to want to please, which is another feature. They're also more compact in size. During that same interview at the house, my sister has adopted a Belgian Malinois, so I had that dog over there to sort of show what we're talking about size-wise. So that's one of the reasons, because that's, again, what's the most commonly used. You know, before we were importing all of the Belgian Malinois from Europe, but now there's actually a breeding program at Lackland Air Force for producing our American version of the Belgian Malinois. Smart dogs, great dogs. Unfortunately, they also have a nickname. Instead of Malinois, they're called Maligators because they are notorious for eating everything. So, but Kane has a big red Kong that he plays with. So, anybody else? We'll be over there.
Last word? No. Thank you very much.
That's all for tonight's Author on Tour. I'm Darren Foden. We have been podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore in Denver, Colorado. Stay pod tuned in the coming weeks as we podcast Authors on Tour.